It is the Doomsday Podcast. We are back with a special edition, the opening of training camp. And as sad as it is, Ed Werder and I are in different places. We attempted to be together. It didn't quite work out. But Ed, the one thing I have some joy in is that somebody else is paying for your trip this year. I think it was 2 years ago, perhaps, that you were with the Doomsday on the Doomsday, but you were in the middle of finalizing your deal with ESPN. So now, if I have my math correct, this makes it like 2 years that you've been back with ESPN. Ed, is it great to be back in Oxnard and at our favorite hotel in Ventura, or are you having a hard time even adjusting without me? I mean, and you know, you can be honest.
Well, it's always disappointing that, you know, you can't, when you're talking about ESPN covering my expenses versus the Doomsday Podcast covering my travel expenses. But it seems to me that you've generally been able to work in a family vacation of sorts with your training camp visits most recently. So I do miss Meredith and Parker not being able to see the sights while I drive you to and from training camp, and we plot out our strategy as to our content for the Doomsday Podcast. But I am glad that at least one of us was invited to be out here, was able to get a credential to be out here for the very opening of camp. I know that you think that you may come out later, and I think that would be outstanding. I'll be back here again next weekend for ESPN. But I think it's great that there's some level of normalcy, at least in the equation now. I mean, it's still not normal. You know, there's the surge of the Delta variant. California, Los Angeles County implemented an indoor mask order again last week, which caused me to wonder whether the Cowboys would back out of coming to training camp at all. But I think we saw from Jerry Jones today that this is a mission that he embraces. He wants to be, you know, on the leading edge of the NFL, getting America and American business back to whatever the new normal is going to be. And so he is very committed to bringing the Cowboys back to California and back to Oxnard for training camp for the first time in, I guess, what, 2 years now, 3 years. So there are some limitations in place, but the Cowboys got the NFL to approve their plan. And that didn't happen with everybody. The Pittsburgh Steelers were not allowed to go to Latrobe, Pennsylvania, even though, you know, they're reporting this week early as well, because the two teams are meeting in the Hall of Fame game in 2 weeks. But I think it's great that the Cowboys are back here, that football is returning, and that there is some expectation that it'll be a more normal engagement than it was last year.
All right. Live from Frito Nation Productions, with our producer, Mark Frito Friedman, who looks really good, by the way, after both of our medical issues. It is the Doomsday Podcast. Frito, if you would, play the music. All right, there it is. And Ed Werder reporting live from Oxnard, California, and he is kind of in his own personal studio as we speak. And Ed, if you would kind of take us through the Cowboys arrived yesterday. We tape this on Wednesday evening, not just a few hours after the Cowboys news conference. You've been doing live hits for ESPN, doing all those things that that you do. Getting in and then sort of getting out there yesterday and getting the lay of the land and then seeing the State of the Union, the Cowboys State of the Union address. How much normalcy did it feel? I mean, you were just talking about, you know, obviously the state has some new mandates and all that kind of thing. And how weird does it feel? I know you are wearing a device, and I don't think that's connected to like any of your drinking in the past or anything like that.
It's not an ankle monitor, no. I did not win early release from from a legal offense. But so we were required to have proof of vaccination to cover training camp. We were also required to have a negative COVID test within 72 hours, which is kind of ridiculous because I got the test the day before yesterday and then got on a plane with 300 people to fly to California. And so who knows what I was exposed to in the interim. But then when we got here to training camp, they provided us these electronic tracking devices that are able to determine any close contacts you have in case someone tests positive. They can go back and see who it is you interacted with for 15 minutes or more, and then force all of those people to isolate or at least separate them from different components of the team. So there are still different tiers in place out here. And that's kind of interesting because the Cowboys set up the chairs today for the press conferences. Everybody had their name on a chair. They're all, you know, spaced 6 feet apart. And then Jerry walked in and, you know, was a tier one guy and he's interacting. He's hugging Brad Sham. He's, you know, consoling Clarence Hill. He's engaging with a couple of different people physically, even though he's somebody who's in direct contact with players and coaches and should not have this sort of physical contact with somebody who's not in tier one. But he did because that's Jerry. Jerry came across, I think, as very excited about being here. That it means a lot to him, that the media's attendance is a high priority for him because it promotes the Cowboys and the game and the league. And, you know, that's it. I thought one of the great moments in the press conference today was Jerry talking about doing Hard Knocks and Mike McCarthy saying that when Jerry called him, he was driving and he almost drove his truck off the road when Jerry told him, because he's like most coaches and doesn't really have an interest in creating greater access and scrutiny, especially when you're coming off a 6-10 season and got fired in Green Bay, you know, before that. But Jerry obviously wants to promote the Cowboys brand and reinforce its importance and be, like I said, on the leading edge of bringing football back to America.
All right. In fact, let's listen to Mike McCarthy, one of his best moments of this news conference, maybe one of his only moments, with his reaction to finding out about Hard Knocks.
Well, no, I'm just going to be honest. I mean, I about wrecked my truck when Jerry called me. I was driving through a rainstorm, but once I got back on the road, I'm all in, so I'm excited about it. He actually gave me his glasses on the way in. I think we're good. So.
All right. Ed, the other part of this is Jerry addressed early on, and he knew he would be asked about this, kind of where the Cowboys are in the whole vaccination process. And I thought he painted a rather rosy picture. The last numbers we've seen are that 13 of the 32 teams have reached that threshold of, I believe it's 85% fully vaccinated. And the way Jerry told it is that they've done a great job. I think right now they have 89 players on the roster. I think they can have 90, but right now it's 89. And he said there were only a handful of people, a handful of players that weren't in the pipeline somehow, whether that's one vaccination or wherever. As you heard him explain that, Ed, did you take that at face value? I mean, you're not one who, we're not really trained to take things at face value, but did as you've kind of gathered details and tried to figure all that out, do you sense that they are pretty close to the threshold, or was Jerry painting a pretty optimistic picture here?
Well, it's hard to determine exactly the statement that he was making because he said all but a handful of players, and that would be five, are in the pipeline or have agreed to, you know, get vaccinated. So it sounds like some of the people he's counting now as essentially vaccinated are guys who have not gotten even one shot. Certainly anybody who's gotten at least one of the two shots he considers to be in the pipeline toward vaccination. So I don't, as usual with Dr. Jerry and medical situations, we don't know exactly what the truth is. It sounds like, I think the most recent numbers I saw were that they were around 70% as a team. And Jerry's trying to make it sound like they're a lot closer to 85%. And the other thing he said was he doesn't see them being at a competitive disadvantage. He thinks that everybody they want to play against Pittsburgh in 2 weeks will be eligible to play, that won't be a problem. And then he said, and the coaching part of it is not an issue at all, which then led to Mike McCarthy disclosing that, hey, he had some hesitation about getting the vaccine himself, but ultimately he did it because he said the only thing, you know, that this season is about winning a championship. And this is what gives him the best season. Said he educated himself, obviously, with medical resources, you know, people in the NFL have that the average person doesn't, but that he hesitated to accept the vaccine solution, but then did. Maybe Jerry reminded him who he works for and that he was 6-10 last year, and that Jerry's not going to tolerate any excuses this year like he did a year ago.
Yeah, Mike later went on to say that early on he had consulted with Cole Beasley, and that was one of the reasons he was hesitant.
Yeah, I don't think he was as hesitant as Cole Beasley, but I'm not sure anybody is as hesitant as Cole Beasley.
Has Beasley responded to Mark Cuban offering a promotional opportunity via Pfizer? Have we seen anything from him?
Didn't Mark Cuban offer Beasley, if he got vaccinated, to provide his wife a certain amount of stock in Pfizer?
Correct.
And I believe Beasley responded rejecting that idea, and he wanted something more in return, something of greater value that would involve Pfizer stock than what Cuban was offering in terms of amount.
Oh, man.
Cole drives a hard bargain. That's why he's not a Cowboy. That's exactly. One of the reasons he's not a Cowboy.
Yeah. And he's had a pretty good career there for Buffalo. So we'll see how that it'll be interesting to see, like, if the crowd won't care. I mean, if he's playing well, he'll be okay. But still, he's taken a little bit of a hit, I think, for his take on all this.
Well, if he's, as long as he's able to play every week and it doesn't affect his preparation and he doesn't, nobody else contracts the disease and becomes ineligible. Buffalo had an issue, you know, with Josh Norman and several players last year becoming ineligible to play because they tested positive before they went and played the Arizona Cardinals. So they played shorthanded and they lost the game. And maybe that was a factor. So I don't think it'll be easy to forgive Cole Beasley if you're a Buffalo Bills fan, given the position he's taken, if it winds up adversely affecting the eligibility of other players.
All right. I hate that. I was really hoping you could go into our favorite places. I'm kind of living vicariously through you. That little Meridian's.
They're still open. That was one of the first things I checked on, is that they did survive the pandemic. Yeah, they are still open. Our favorite little pizza, pasta, quick pasta place. Yeah.
Okay. And then check our little Italian place down by the beach. I'm not talking about Fiore. I'm talking about our little off the beaten path.
Sacco or Safo or something like that.
Yeah, Sacco or something like that.
I believe they are in business. In fact, my producer, Sean Fitzgerald, and I are planning to walk there tonight.
Yeah, give Fitz my best. If I'd have known he was going to go there, I would have fought harder for this trip.
And the most important thing is Andrea's is open for fish sandwiches.
Yeah, that is a favorite place, especially when... when Stefania comes to town, we took her out there and we had a nice time out there by the bay. That's golly, I miss those places. So I may have to make it out. Although I kind of like our strategy of not being in the same place. I've got to wait till you come back home for good before I try to go back out there, which mainly because the Cowboys are making me do that. But anyway, I can sort of act like that's my decision. Okay. As we start to think about what came out of that news conference, I thought it was interesting. Okay, we'll start with Michael Irvin. Michael Irvin made the comments to Clarence Hill about that the Cowboys, he didn't think with the Cowboys hitting their vaccination rate, that they were trying hard enough to win a Super Bowl. And he took that as like a lack of effort or a lack of heart when they weren't doing everything they could.
The players, if they weren't willing to do.
Correct. That. Lack of commitment, that kind of thing. I thought that was interesting. Jerry, he while he kind of talked about that the Cowboys were doing well in that area, he did not hide from saying, I absolutely approve Michael Irvin's message. Now, we know how much he loves Michael, how much he respects Michael, but I thought that was interesting. There was no like middle ground there where Jerry could have said, hey, I respect Michael because of how hard he worked. In the end, Jerry said something along the lines of, I absolutely back everything he said. So in a way, I think he's piggybacking on Michael to put a little pressure on anybody kind of holding out on this vaccination.
Well, I mean, you know, Jerry has really not accepted for the most part, the limitations that the league has wanted to implement throughout the course of this dealing with this pandemic. Look at the attendance at stadiums last year. Jerry was the guy, you know, pushing for stadiums to open, and he bragged about the fact that the Cowboys had like 24% of all NFL fans that attended games last year were Cowboys fans. And he claimed, of course, you know, nobody got sick from the experience, and, you know, they hosted a fight at Cowboys Stadium, 70,000 people attended. Nobody got sick that he's aware of. So again, we're back to the whole, well, what's the real truth here? We don't really know. It's hard to imagine nobody got infected at a game and nobody suffered serious consequences as a result of that. But you're right. He is using whatever resources he can to exert pressure on players to get vaccinated, because it's going to make it easier to manage the roster. And it's going to make for, you know, more certainty that you're going to have your best players on the field every week, which is understandable when you're an owner who's running out of opportunities, which Jerry's been well aware of that for any number of years. And that, I think, more than anything, is what makes him so emotional in moments like we saw today.
Did you become more emotional as you got older, like in your 50s? Are you more emotional than you were in your 30s or 40s, or has that not really happened to you?
No, I think I've always been a pretty emotional person. So I don't think the aging process has amplified that and certainly hasn't diminished it. So no, I would say I haven't had that experience. We don't know. None of us know, right, when how close we are to dying. But the elderly among us, and I'm going to include Jerry in that group, I think have a sense of that better than the rest of us do, or it's on their minds more. And that's why we've seen for the last 3 or 4 years, you know, Jerry talking about, hey, I don't have time for a bad time. And, we got to win now, and I'm running out of opportunities. So I think that's probably why he, puts things in the context that he does and becomes emotional in situations like we saw earlier today.
Yeah. And it did happen. And I mean, I would say maybe 3 different times he became emotional. Later, we'll talk about, I really want to get your take, because you were there for Jimmy and Jerry, and I want you to kind of let us know, to put it in context, if this was like a shocking admission today that he made. I mean, it's hard to know with Jerry, because he was kind of being funny in recalling a story. But in that same time, he sort of admitted some things. But we'll get to that in a second. The way I wanted to talk about this is, this is good and bad. The fact that the Cowboys are like 25 or 26 years removed from making it to an NFC title game, it's very strange that even now they're so far removed. They've gotten close to an NFC title game a couple of times, especially the one in Green Bay. But that even now, Ed, it still comes up so much, like the 90s. Now, sometimes it's about the reporters bringing it up, so it's not completely on Jerry. But what did you make of Jerry talking about, you know, it's like he doesn't want to compare, but did you notice Steven jumped in there and Steven wanted to compare Dak to Troy? I mean, you know Troy really, really well, better than most people in the media. It's like they were trying not to do the whole triplets, let's compare them to the 90s, but Ed, we're stuck in the past here. I mean, and you were covering those teams, so it's got to be an interesting place for you to be, to watch them be so obsessed with the past, because the past is so wonderful, but they are far removed from it.
Well, you know, Jerry made the statement that he's often said, and he said it again today, you can't imagine the size of the check I would write to go back to a Super Bowl. But obviously that's not what's required to get back to a Super Bowl. And he doesn't have that opportunity. He's tried that. He's tried to buy players and get back to a championship. But today he said, I would do anything to go to get back in that Super Bowl. That's a fact. And I think most people who are his critics would say, the fact that you're saying that and you're still the general manager of this football team is contradictory. Like, if you would do anything to get back to a Super Bowl, like you're saying, then why haven't you tried to change the equation as it relates to the owner being the general manager? He hasn't done that. And so I think it's fair to say, to be skeptical about how truthful he's being about that, because not only has he never done that, as far as we know, he's never considered it. He's just absolutely ruled out the possibility of him being anything other than the general manager. He's basically said, and maybe he's specifically said, I bought the team so I could be the general manager, and I'm going to be the general manager until I die. And a lot of people would say that's the reason they haven't been back to a championship. And so Jerry's statement today is false. But it's interesting. I think you want an owner. I think it's good for an owner to send the message to the players about his desperation, about his commitment to doing that. But in reality, I'm not sure how factually accurate it really is.
Even though we've heard him say it several times, let's listen to Jerry make that offer that he's done, has said so many times before about what he would do to win a Super Bowl.
The facts are that I would right now, if I could, and I knew had a good chance to do it, I'd do anything known to man to get in a Super Bowl. That's a fact. And there's nothing in my mind that can have a higher priority than that.
And honestly, he just said to go to a Super Bowl. So it wasn't even really about winning a Super Bowl.
Well, they've won everyone he's been to. So he assumes if they get there, they're going to win. But, the other thing, you made the point about the comparison with the teams of the 90s, the dynasty years, and Jerry obviously fondly remembers those. When he was asked what this team needs to do to get back to that, the first guy he mentioned was Charles Haley. And then he mentioned Deion Sanders. And then he talked about, some of the qualities that are required of teams that reach that level of excellence. And he began to talk about, that he thinks that some of those things exist in the roster that he has now. And he did say, as you were suggesting, hey, I'm not trying to say Dak is Troy, and I'm not trying to say Zeke is Emmett. And then he said, and then Michael. And it was almost to me like, wow, I didn't realize, I'm just now understanding after 30 years, Jerry thinks Michael was the most important part of the whole thing because of the unique personality that he was, because of the competitive fire and accountability and beyond the playmaking. And then he said, and we may have that in Dak. And then you're like, okay, so that justifies, in his mind, paying $160 million to his quarterback, but it doesn't explain why it took him so long to do it, which that has been worked to the detriment of this team and the way it's put together under a salary cap. 3 years ago, they made the mistake of doing players out of order and making Zeke Elliott the highest paid running back in football, which they said they wouldn't do. And they did it, even though he was holding out. And that allowed Amari Cooper to leverage them and become a free agent. And now he became the second highest paid wide receiver in football. They didn't get Dak done. And now they're paying Dak this humongous contract. And so everything's sort of out of whack financially because they failed to act on their own interpretation of Dak's unique ability as a quarterback, who in their mind is the Michael Irvin of quarterbacks.
Yeah, and boy,
does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, I think it does. And I think it is kind of funny that sometimes he's like they stumble onto these realizations. Oh, wait, Michael was the key. Michael, I mean, I'm sure he's had moments where it's like, well, Troy was the key. And he's reminded because of these recent comments how Michael was the heart and soul of that team. And boy, Steven jumped all over that Dak thing. I'm reminded of, you know, how they used to talk about Romo. And, you know, there's some thought that if you fall all over yourselves talking about your quarterback, like that's required of you. You need to. And one of the questions that came up, they did say, I guess it was McCarthy made the comment that there would be no, that we'll see when you start watching these practices how they manage Dak, but they kept him out of 11-on-11 scrimmages in OTAs and all that kind of stuff. And he said there will be basically no restrictions on him. Now, Ed, I think what we're going to find out is once these preseason games start, there's a chance we don't see him. I mean, they might get him a tiny bit of work, but they're not going to want him out there much. I just can't imagine it at all. I mean, maybe at one point they'll try to work him in, but it really did seem like they were saying he's a full go. Now we'll have to monitor that and see if that truly is the case. But I think if we had to say, okay, what are their top three reasons why they think this team could be special? Dak is considered far and above everything else. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. Yeah. And then they're paying him accordingly. And they saw last year without him, how hard it is for them to compete. And that's why Dak Prescott, you know, the first franchise quarterback in Cowboys history, suffers the worst possible outcome for a franchise tag player, lasts only five games and suffers his first season ending injury of his career and still wins the negotiation by a landslide. So, yeah, I think they value him. I think they're right about him. I think he's a top 10 quarterback. They're paying him like he's better than that. But I really think that they feel like, if they have him and they have their offensive line, you know, then they can win. They'll be better on defense with Dan Quinn. They certainly dedicated themselves in the draft to acquiring better personnel on that side of the ball, which is necessary. I really think their model is the Chiefs. The Chiefs have been to at least the championship game 3 years in a row since Mahomes became the quarterback. And nobody thinks Dak is that good yet. And probably never will be, but I think they feel like in terms of explosiveness, in terms of the potential to score a lot of points on a consistent basis, that they can be the equivalent of the Chiefs on offense. And then if they can be like the Chiefs on defense and just be good and create a few turnovers, that's the equation for championship football in the modern era in Dallas.
You know, what I heard you saying is that Dak, in some weird way, getting injured, he actually gained leverage in these negotiations. And I have not found that my injuries helped me with negotiations or gave me more leverage. But certainly Dak came out on the right side of that thing. Now, also, you had a little bit of a back and forth with Jerry, or maybe it was McCarthy, about Zeke. And I think even his physique came up and how he looks. And I thought that was interesting. They were talking about how he's in the front row and every meeting and all of that.
In the quarterback meetings.
Yeah. I mean, we know that this team or this whole system before McCarthy arrived was built around Zeke. And now, at least money-wise, financially, with the receiving core that they have, it's probably built more around Dak in this passing attack. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know where exactly that leaves Zeke.
Well, I interpret everything I've seen, you know, this way. I think under Mike McCarthy, Zeke Elliott, no matter what kind of shape he's in, he's not going to have a chance to win a third rushing title anytime soon, because he's, McCarthy just doesn't use the running back that way. You know, when to me, it's a bad match, Zeke and making Zeke the highest paid running back in football and then hiring Mike McCarthy to be the coach. That's not a very complimentary situation, because, you know, in his 13 years in Green Bay, McCarthy never had a running back rank in the top 10 in rushing attempts. And he comes to a team that and he inherits Ezekiel Elliott, who at the time led all running backs in attempts in his first, you know, 4 years in the NFL. And then last year he became kind of a role player, and maybe Tony Pollard was more valuable to Mike McCarthy. So all of that certainly convinced Zeke to commit this offseason to physical improvement in a way that we've not previously seen. I mean, I've always thought he was one of the most competitive guys on the team. I think he's a real dog. Like, you wish Amari Cooper had some Zeke Elliott, you know, in him. I'm not sure he does, but I don't know if he's going to win rushing titles anymore, but I still think that he can be an invaluable piece to winning football games, whether it's closing teams out in the fourth quarter. But I just don't think he's going to get the opportunities, because everything, like Mike McCarthy says, everything he does is done through the quarterback. Jason Garrett wanted to build a physical offensive line and dominate the run game. And so if Zeke Elliott renegotiated at the right time, if he hadn't, if his contract had been up when McCarthy got hired, I'm not sure the Cowboys would have paid him.
Yeah, or if he'd even be on the roster still. I mean, in a sense, we'll see. And I don't have the financial ramifications in front of me, but there is a chance this is the last season for several players. Jalen Smith, Leighton Vander Esch, Zeke Elliott.
I mean, Amari Cooper.
And so this is going to be fascinating, but I don't think it's a horrible place to be, because some of these guys are maybe playing for future contracts, maybe even playing in front of other teams. So I don't think that's all bad. All right, I want us to before we discuss this, I want to hear this. This is where Jerry Jones was asked about Jimmy Johnson going in to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and Jerry, as he tends to do, sort of got into some stories about what it was like early on. But then after that, they kind of kept the conversation going, and he told a Barry Switzer story when Barry first came in to be interviewed to become the next head coach of the Cowboys. And here's what came out of that.
Never have a time of year like we are coming into training camp. But what I don't remember, the very first training camp that we went to with Thousand Oaks. And I brought Larry Lacewell out, who was going to join the Cowboys 4 or 5 years later, I think, from the time we bought. I forget how many years it was. But Larry rode out with me. I didn't come out the day the team came, but I brought him out, and a guy that owned a team in the Donald Trump League that was a minority team in Donald Trump. And so we all three rode out, and I remember stepping out, coming out to Thousand Oaks, smelling that grass, being out where the great tradition of the Cowboys were with training camp. And I just had to pinch myself to think that I got to be a part of that. I remember getting on a bus with the whole team a couple of weeks later and coming up Highway 1 from Thousand Oaks, and we pulled up right out here. And Al Davis was here. He had big black screens blocking all this off. Al Davis was out here. Came through that gate, and Al Davis, and I looked up to him so much. And Al Davis came over. Boy, here we were, out here playing football, out on it. And I had died and gone to heaven just to have that kind of experience. I was inspired to get to be a part of that, but I never wasn't afraid that this thing was going to go the other way on you and a lot of things go wrong. We got a lot of answers today that we didn't have back then at that time. But the idea of being a part and coming to training camp goes to my mind, and of course Jimmy was involved in those days. And so all of that comes to my mind when I think of those times. We actually were together here 4.5 years. Now I'd known him for 10 or 15 years before that, or 20 years before that, and thought the world of him, or he wouldn't have been the coach of the Cowboys. And so when I look back at the time that we got to enjoy and what happened to us during that time, I go back to what Barry Switzer said. Barry Switzer came in the office, and Jimmy had just left. And so Barry came down from Norman, Oklahoma to talk about getting the job. And he comes in and he said, "Where's Jimmy?" Now, Barry had coached us both. He said, "Where's Jimmy?" And I said, "Jimmy's gone." He said, "Well, that's not right. Get him. Get him in here." I said, "Where's Jimmy?" I said, "Barry, Jimmy's gone." That was Switzer. I don't know what.
Did you think about how you could do that now? I mean,
just think of those great times. And Jimmy's great coach. Great coach, and ridiculous that my role here was my job to keep it together. It was my job. It should have deference, should have had deference to something that was working good. So those are the things that come to my mind. We had a great run of it. He's a great coach, and I'm proud to have him as a friend, and proud to have had the times that we had. We just had a great experience.
All right, Ed, you were on the scene for all of this. I mean, it is funny. Jerry is he was profane today. He was emotional. There were tears. At one point, I thought he was going to kind of wrap it up with Jimmy by saying, "I had to clean it all up." I thought he was going to get back into one of those kind of like, "It was me. I had to be in control." And then, obviously, Ed, he kind of comes back around to saying, "Hey," in more colorful language, "but I screwed it up. I screwed it up." And I'm just saying, all the many, many times you've interviewed him, you were there when it all happened with Jimmy and Jerry, and you had a front row seat to it. Did today seem like some sort of breakthrough in that whole saga?
Yeah, I've heard him say, he said to me before, you know, in fact, during the dissolution of their partnership when we were reporting on it, he said at one point, "I'm the one who has to take proprietary interest in this franchise. Jimmy doesn't, and that's as it should be." But that's different to me than what he said today, which is, "This was my fault. The fact that this happened is my fault. It was my job to make it work as the owner and general manager, and I didn't," which is the first time I've ever heard him really take responsibility ultimately for the whole thing. Now, you know, do I think Jimmy was going to be Tom Landry and be the Cowboys head coach for 29 years? No, I don't. But I do think that even after they had the issue that led to them separating at the owners meeting in 1994, after they had won back-to-back Super Bowls, I do think that Jimmy cared enough about having a chance at history and being the first coach to win 3 Super Bowls in a row that had Jerry handled the fallout correctly and let Jimmy know that he truly valued what he was adding to the franchise, I think Jimmy would have come back for the 95 season. And had they won that Super Bowl, because they went to the championship game and lost under Switzer, then they won the next year. I could have seen Jimmy being persuaded to stay until they didn't win a Super Bowl, which maybe that would have been 4 years, maybe that would have been 5 years. And we've heard on this podcast, you know, during training camp when we had Darren Woodson on a couple of years ago, that he said he's still pissed about it. You know, he's still mad that they didn't get a chance to win all they could have won, however many that was. And Troy Aikman has said, "Hey, we could have been Belichick, you know, and Brady if this hadn't happened." And so I think it was a big thing for Jerry to take responsibility for it today. Now I'm interested to see when Jimmy makes his speech in Canton. Is he as deferential to Jerry as Jerry was to him in 2017 when Jerry made his speech and praised Jimmy? I don't know. I also thought it was interesting that he wouldn't commit. He made it seem at one point like, you know, inevitably Jimmy will be in the Ring of Honor. Not going to be this year. He doesn't want to do anything to deflect or detract from Jimmy receiving the ultimate honor of going in the Hall of Fame. But when I specifically then asked him, so you are going to put Jimmy in the Ring of Honor at some near point in the future, he said, you know, Ed, let's just leave it alone and let's just have our fun with this. And he was very noncommittal. And you know what I think the reason for that is? Okay. I think the reason for that is they both have to agree. I think Jimmy isn't willing to go in under present circumstances.
Both have to be on the same page. That's interesting. Not willing to go into the Ring of Honor under these. Well,
I just think there have been moments where it's kind of been promised that it was about to happen. It was going to happen.
It didn't.
You know, and Jimmy should make plans, and it didn't happen. And so I think, you know, maybe that's a source of frustration for Jimmy. And that's the only reason I could think of that in that moment, Jerry wouldn't say, absolutely, he's going to go, you know, in the Ring of Honor. Why wouldn't he go in the Ring of Honor? And he didn't say that. He said, let's just have our fun. You know, why do you have to ruin it, Ed? I wasn't trying to ruin it. I was trying to make sure I was understanding what he had previously said, which seemed to me, Jimmy's going in the Ring of Honor. I was just trying to get him to commit to it, and he wouldn't do it. So if anybody else has an explanation, I'd love to hear it.
Had you heard the funny Switzer on the couch story? Has that been told a bunch over the years?
I had not heard that, but I believe the Dallas Morning News may have had a similar anecdote in a story David Moore wrote about Jerry going into the Hall of Fame in 2017. I didn't recall that, though. That was new to me. I had not heard that story before.
I feel like you should outrank David Moore for that first question, but I guess he is out there a little more often than you are, so we'll allow him to do that. But I feel like
as soon as he fails to do it well, I'll jump in.
I think that started today. No, he does a fine job out there, and I did hear an NFL Network, Jane Slater, our friend from NFL Network, Ed, was saying that she thought it was kind of hot out there. She was complaining about the weather. I thought, oh my gosh, I cannot imagine.
I know it sounds preposterous, especially for people who, you know, live in the Dallas area, and it's, you know, miraculous. I don't think we've had a 100-degree day yet.
No, weather's nice here.
It's 75 degrees in Oxnard today. But sitting on those tennis courts with the heat radiating, the sun radiating off it, it feels hot. It's not worth complaining about for sure, but it does feel hotter than it might seem at 75 degrees.
Do you do a 50 SPF or what do you go with, like a bullfrog type?
Well, I've used some products that were recently taken off the market because they have benzene in them, and that's a known cancer causer. So I'm kind of at a loss now as to what I should use, because the Neutrogena products that I've typically used have been recalled. Ooh. By Johnson & Johnson.
Oh, gosh. Johnson & Johnson got busy making that vaccine that doesn't work. And
but it only doesn't work once.
Does that count, by the way? Are you fully vaccinated? If a Cowboys player chooses to use the Johnson & Johnson, does that count as fully vaccinated?
I cannot say, but I assume, given the time we're talking about, the time crunch here, that's a nice solution to move the process along, is to eliminate the 1 month wait for somebody to be fully vaccinated.
All right, Ed, as we get ready to wrap it up.
It's the ultimate take one for the team, is Jerry's message.
Yeah, I think.
Or take two, if necessary.
Yeah. But
get on the field.
I don't really know if, like, Mike McCarthy needed to be that honest. Like, well, I didn't think the vaccine was something we should be doing. But anyway, he did get the vaccine. He was fully vaccinated. He's fully vaccinated now. And you had to take your card out there, didn't you, Ed? Did you have to show your vaccination card?
They accepted a photograph of it, but okay. I'd rather not travel with it. I don't want to risk losing it. But yeah, I checked in advance, and they said a photo would be perfectly suitable. So there you go.
Mm. I feel like I'm one of the most vaccinated people in the media, and still I'm kind of on the outside looking in. Ed, as we get ready for the first practice tomorrow, which will be Thursday, as you stand out there at that first practice, and you're representing ESPN, but mostly the Doomsday Podcast, are you going to will it be like huge focus on Dak? Like, what are you, as you're out there for a couple more days, what's going to be your biggest focus in these first couple of practices?
Well, I think one big story is, you know, Zeke Elliott, his commitment to improvement in the offseason, what he sees his role being with Mike McCarthy, and the fact that he hasn't spoken since the season ended. So I think there's some interest media wise in getting access to him as soon as possible. I don't think Dak Prescott's going to talk tomorrow. It sounds like Friday's more likely to be a day for the quarterback to speak for the first time since he came out here. And then I think the other part of the equation is, you know, the defense and looking at the linebacker position and how those are going to be filled and who's going to win playing time and what the roles are going to be for, you know, for all the players that they have acquired and made significant investments in, whether draft capital or, you know, financially in the last couple of years. So including Micah Parsons and Jabril Cox, and you mentioned Leighton Van Der Esch playing after they declined to pick up his 5th-year option, and Jalen Smith having a contract that doesn't necessarily protect him beyond the season. So I think that's the other part of the equation that's going to be the most interesting. And then looking at those other corners and seeing who the starting corners are going to be this year, because the Cowboys were, you know, bad across the board defensively. They allowed the most points in franchise history, and the Cowboys have been playing football for 60 years. They allowed 2 of the 3 highest single game rushing totals in franchise history. And they weren't any good defending the pass either, because they allowed 27 touchdown passes to wide receivers, most in the NFL. So Dan Quinn's got the biggest job to do.
Yeah, and Dan's going to have a lot of pressure, and they've talked a lot about him. Keep your eye on that Nation Wright.
He signed today.
Yeah, and it's 6'6". I mean, I don't know if he'll
198. He's a guy who said he's Richard Sherman with more athleticism, right? And now's not a good time to compare yourself to Richard Sherman. But I think the point's been made nonetheless.
Yeah. Well, Sherman's your guy, and that was an odd story that's taken place there. And apparently that will it's going to take him a while the authorities to work through that one, it looks like. All right, Ed, really good stuff from out there. Thank you for representing us so well. I have to assume a lot of people are asking where I am. Just tell them that I
am still,
coalescing.
You're in the pipeline. You're just a vaccination or two away.
Yeah, a couple of vaccinations. I'm one Johnson shot from being out there. But look forward to spending time with you at some point. But have a wonderful time, and maybe go for either a brisk walk or a bike ride. I shouldn't be the one suggesting that. But on the near the ocean, near our old hotel, all right, in our what used to be kind of a bombed out hotel. One time, Ed and I arrived out there, and I can't even remember what was going on there. Ed,
they were redoing the rooms, I think, and the lounges, and they had this bizarre breakfast area / bar and grill. It was a hopelessly bad situation, but it's not that way anymore.
Oh, good. I just want to make sure you're secure and you feel okay about everything. Give everybody my best, Ed, and continue to do great work. And I tell you what, we'll just be standing by if you get like some great interview or something and you're like, hey, we should put this on the podcast, you just let me know. Okay.
And that was great,
and I appreciate you all. I'm trying to wrap up some financial details and getting all our sponsors lined up for doing all these for free. All right. Appreciate you, Ed.
Okay. You're not covering my expenses. Consider that my donation.
Okay. All right. There he goes. It is,
I see it.
Ed Werder, from Oxnard, California. It's the Doomsday Podcast. Thanks to, Mark Friedel Friedman, Frito Nation Productions. Good night from Allen, Texas.